It's a similar model to what Jeff Rabin does. A good friend of the show, we've had on a couple times over the last 10 days or so. Jeff Rabin helps out with Social Security, Disability Insurance, and SSI. And Jeff, it's good to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. And with your schedule and everything that you do, I'm not surprised you have to keep careful account of what's going on in your life.
You know, I should post my schedule publicly so people could know when they can reach me or not. Or, you know, just follow me around. Hey, that sounds creepy. Let's not do that. Jeff, you do SSDI and SSI. I think our listeners are pretty well educated to this by now, but we are on at a different time. So that might be the first time someone's heard those two acronyms. So I'm sorry to make you do this again, but just really quickly, what are we talking about here?
We are talking about people who are suffering from really severe medical problems that make it impossible for them to work for a period that's lasted or expected to last at least a year. If they meet that requirement, then they can investigate whether they're eligible for either Social Security Disability Insurance or Supplemental Security Income Benefits.
It's interesting that we just had Karen on talking about property taxes, and here you are doing SSI and SSDI, completely different things, but there are things you can do on your own, but way more successful rate if you have a lawyer who knows the ins and outs of how it works. A fair number of people do get the benefit or the reduction in taxes if they go with a lawyer, and it's a helpful process. And you guys are really experts in this very specific thing. I think there's some symmetry between you and my previous guest.
You know, it's a little niche practice that not a lot of lawyers do. But we have the Act, and then we have the regulations, and then we have the regulations which are reinterpreted by the rulings, and then we have the rulings that are interpreted by the Palms and the Hallecks, and then all of that is reinterpreted by the federal court decisions. So it's a little narrow area of law, but there's a lot of intricacy.
What have you been chatting about with clients in the past couple of weeks? What's the scuttlebutt around Social Security? Are we getting a little back to normal now that the government's back operating?
As normal as Social Security ever is, yes. But there was an interesting issue that came up this week that we really haven't talked a lot about.
Okay.
And if you can give me a minute,
please.
It is a subject that comes up in almost every conversation I have with clients.
Okay, what is it?
And the question is, can I work while my case is pending?
That's a great point. I hadn't thought of that, Jeff, because maybe people think, well, I shouldn't work because that might prove my case to be invalid, right? If I'm working while my case is pending, doesn't that hurt my case? I can't believe I've never asked you that before, Jeff. What a question.
And it's not only that, and that is a very real issue, which I'll discuss in just a moment, but the bigger issue is it's just expensive to live.
Right.
And if you're not working, it's really hard to get by if you don't have family or a spouse or somebody that can help support you. Oh. And my people suffer, and they lose their homes, they lose their cars, their marriages break up. And so the question is, I got to work, I don't want to lose my house, and what are the limits?
And what are they?
So let's talk about it. There's really two issues. First is just gross earnings. So starting in 2026, Social Security defines what they call work as substantial gainful activity, as any activity that generates $1,690 gross in a month. So theoretically, if you stay below that number, you're not considered to be working under the Social Security Act, and you can still have a case pending for disability benefits. Now, Social Security judges aren't dumb. They know somebody who's at $1,600 gross in a month is probably just playing with their hours just to stay under it, so that's going to kind of red flag their case. But most judges, if people are earning $1,000, $1,100, $900 gross in a month, most judges are going to overlook that in terms of what the earnings are. Now, the thing that people have to be aware of, and I've had this happen too many times, 2 months out of the year have three paychecks if you're paid every other week. And you may be judging your paycheck on that two paychecks a month, and you're staying well under that $1,690 number. And then all of a sudden you get that third paycheck. And remember, Social Security looks at gross income before taxes. And all of a sudden that third paycheck throws you off. Or the other issue comes up is the boss says, hey, you did really good work. I want to give you an extra $200. Or I had this happen last week. Somebody's getting commissions, and all of a sudden their commissions are kicking in, and they're earning too much when you consider their commissions. So, yes, you can work, and we want people to work generally because we want people to have a chance for a better life, and nobody, no lawyer, advocate, representative can ever guarantee a result to anybody. So work is usually a good thing. Now, the one thing that they do have to also consider, let's say we have somebody who's trying to get disability for a really severe anxiety disorder, and they have trouble being around people, and they're keeping their earnings under $1,690, but their job is high school cafeteria attendant. Mm-hmm. Well, they're surrounded by 200 high school kids, and they have to talk to them and instruct them or yell at them or, you know, discipline them or whatever. And then they're trying to say that they're totally disabled by an anxiety disorder. So while the earnings won't undercut their case, the activity, the nature of the activity, can show sometimes more functional ability than we're trying to do in order to prove get approval of their disability application.
So, Jeff, broadly speaking, judges are looking at what you are currently doing and can either use that against you in terms of not giving you SSDI or SSI because, A, you make more than $1,690 a month, or, B, they look at the current job you have versus the symptoms that you are reporting to the judge and saying you can't do, which I get. That makes sense, right? Like, oh, well, why are you applying for this if you can do this job? But what if that job is, like, the only thing you have and it is so debilitating that it's like basically killing you. Like you shouldn't be doing it, but you're just doing it to survive.
Then we have go back to that really key relationship between representative and client where it's all about education. And we teach our clients to communicate that to their treating orthopedic or their treating rheumatologist or their treating psychiatrist about all the symptoms and impact that this work is having on the rest of their life. I work 4 hours a day, and then I go home and I have to sleep for two or lay down for two because my back pain is so bad I can't even make a dinner or wash the dishes. Mm. And once they start documenting that with the doctors, then it's in the medical charts, and then it's evidence, and then we can argue the theory. But that all, nobody thinks about that.
Yeah, no, so
that
I wouldn't
comes
have.
As a result of that representative client relationship and the importance of how we educate our clients on what the real issues are in their case so that we can help them create the evidence that we can use to argue on their behalf.
Okay, so that what you're currently doing can be used maybe against you versus your symptoms is a little more gray area. Is that $1,690 more of a line in the sand, like judges will throw out your case if you're making more than $1,690, or that also can be there's a little gray area there?
So it is a line in the sand.
Okay.
And we actually just had a case this week that we had, the lady has gone over, and so we had to withdraw her application. Her earnings are now down, her condition has worsened, and we're going to refile it. The only fudge area, or the only area in dispute, is there is something that Social Security will consider called impairment-related work expenses, and this is really getting into the weeds. But the easiest example is this. If you have an expense that you're incurring that's not reimbursed by a third party, and that's what enables you to work, then that expense can be used to reduce the gross income. So take, for example, a therapy dog. If the psychiatrist says you have to have a therapy dog in order to go to work, and that dog is with you at work, and it costs you $100 a month to feed that dog and $25 or $30 a month spread out to take the dog to the vet, you can reduce your earnings by that amount, and that might get you under the $1,690 a month.
Okay. All right, Jeff, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have a little bit more with you. 312-981-7200. If someone's running out of the car, what number do you want them to call?
312-431-1000. 312-431-1000, and that'll get our office. You'll talk to our intake team, and we'll try to help.
All right, quick break, and then a few more questions for Jeff Rabin here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Jeff Rabin had a text on the 773, on our phone line from the 773, asking, wasn't President Trump going to cut SSDI big for older seniors? You kind of helped us out on this last week. Apparently that plan has been rolled back, right?
Thankfully, yes. They did, about 2 weeks ago, announce that they were going to withdraw those amendments to the regulations that would have made it much, much more difficult for people over 50 to get disability benefits. It would have been terribly unfair and terribly harmful.
630 says, well, if you have major anxiety, can't you get a job where there isn't people around? I guess that gets to the heart of, Jeff, of what you do, is that, yes, ideally someone finds another job that accommodates or can accommodate their mental issues or their physical issues. The SSDI thing is kind of a, I don't want to say a last resort, Jeff. Those are my words. I don't know. But that's what it is. You're not trying to get people to not have to work. In fact, getting back to work is probably the best outcome on SSDI, or being able to work in general is, because more than likely you're going to make more money than you are on SSDI or SSI.
Oh, far more money working than being on disability. So, and the answer to the question is everything is on a spectrum. So certainly there are people with very minor anxiety. They take medicine and they function perfectly. Then there's people with medicine and therapy and then can function, but they're somewhat limited. Then there's people that are more limited. And then there's people whose anxiety is so severe that there's no way they could function 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, even in a simple, low-stress, unskilled job. And those are the ones that are eligible for disability. So, you know, same thing with back pain. It's the same thing with multiple sclerosis. It's the same thing with almost any medical issue. Some people are fortunate that they're able to get good treatment, their body responds, and they're able to function. Some people just aren't, and that's where our country, through the Social Security Act, has decided to say we would help them.
All right. We're going to do one quick call. And Mary, I know this is probably a longer story than we have time for, but just, Mary, you got a question for Jeff, and what are the basics going on with your family?
Okay, very briefly, I have a 22-year-old grandson who is on the spectrum. I know his father gets a check for him every month for $900, and he doesn't want him to go to work because he doesn't want to lose that $900 a month. How reasonable is this man being with his autistic son?
Interesting. Jeff, I know you'd want more specifics before you passed any real judgment here, of course, but I mean, maybe there's something going on here on the spectrum that the kid can't work. I don't know.
Well, let's assume that, you know, the young man was found totally disabled, so he is severely impaired. The part of the problem is when you have somebody else handling the money, the father should not be concerned about losing the SSI check. That
True.
Check is supposed to be used for the benefit of his son. But more important than any of that, the father's not understanding the law for SSI. When you go back to, if his son were to go back to work on SSI, they would actually end up with more money, because the way the SSI offset works is after the first $85 you lose, they only reduce your SSI check by a dollar for every two that you make. So if this young man's getting $944 a month in SSI, he does sales work and makes $285 in a month. They take off the top 85. There's 200 left. Half of that's 100. So the next month he'd only get 844 in SSI, but he made 285 working. So
right.
When you combine that, the family's still ahead.
Yeah.
So in this case, the father is doing a disservice to his son if the son is able to work.
Okay. Mary, we appreciate the phone call. Jeff, we are out of time, unfortunately. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on. People can go to WGNradio.com. Our conversation last week got so into the weeds, and people love that. If they want to know all the ins and outs of how this works, I encourage people to go listen to that conversation. And where can they reach you at, Jeff?
Two ways. They can call the office, 312-431-1000, or they can go to our website and get information, www.rkblegal.com, or they can even go look for me now on TikTok and follow my new TikTok campaign, which has been a lot of fun.
I'm going to look that up right now, Jeff. Take care, my friend.
Take care. Thank you so much for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
That's great. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We'll be on next week at 3:30. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.